Hello, everyone. Welcome to Reiki Radio. I am your host, Yolanda, and happy Monday. It is the new moon today, actually. It's the new moon in Scorpio. Before we get into the podcast, just want to remind all of you, if you are new to the community, welcome. Be sure to head over to my website, theenergeticalchemist.com, and sign up for the newsletter because what you will get right away is the energy of the month. And you also get free access to Creating with the Moon and Stars, which will really support you in how to navigate the monthly energies, including some tips around new moon and full moon rituals. So it's perfect for today. But you'll also get access to 22 days of transformation for free, and that will support you in your energetic alchemy. So there's a lot of free content there for you, as well as you will get updates with upcoming classes and events. I also want to remind you that the Reiki Rays Global Healing Summit is going on right now. It started officially on Saturday, and today is day three. So you can register for this for free. And if you register for free, you can watch the new interviews as they are disseminated each day for 24 hours. However, you also have an option of accessing everything, the entire summit, and watching at your own pace. But for either option, go to my website, theenergeticalchemist.com, and on the homepage, you will see how you can register. So go ahead and grab that today, especially if you are into Reiki, if you practice Reiki, just curious, whatever it may be. There are so many beautiful conversations within the summit that are from people who are researching very specific areas within Reiki. You'll hear some phenomenal ways that people are working with the system. There are authors, teachers, healers from around the world, and it was an honor to be a part of that again. So I got to conduct 17 of the interviews. And yeah, I mean, there are just so many phenomenal people you will meet and learn from. So today, though, on the podcast, I got to have a conversation with Danielle Delsky. So you may have known of her work already. She's an author. She is a witch. She is a poet, an artist. She calls herself a heathen visionary. And we met her here on the podcast 2 years ago. We talked about a book that she had published back then, as well as her oracle deck that had come out around that time. So we talked about Seasons of Moon and Flame and Sacred Hag's Oracle. But now she has a new book out, and it is just as amazing. It's called Bones and Honey, and it's a very, very interesting book. So this book is a book of prayers and incantations, and we talk about this as well as her work in general. I think it will inspire you. She's very interesting and so just amazing with words in general. I wanted to let you know something about this book, though, because I know a lot of you who listen to the podcast, you resonate with so many of the teachers and the authors who come. And this time you can actually interact with the author. So Danielle is having an event on November 15th, 16th, and 17th. They will be live sessions to explore this new book with her, Bones and Honey. So if you do register, you'll receive access to the recordings, even if you can't attend live. And I will put the link for that down in the show description. So again, if you are interested, if you have the book or you order the book, you can join her for live discussions about the book on the 15th, 16th, and 17th. That is coming up. So there is a link to learn more about her work. You can go to danieldelsky.com. You can also go to thehagschool.com, which is a school that she facilitates as well. So yeah, I really enjoyed this conversation with Danielle. I'm sure you will enjoy it too. And if you have any questions for me after the show, you can always join me for the Reiki Radio Roundtable, which happens on Tuesdays, and we can talk about anything. You can come and join me. It's a live discussion about the podcast, about Reiki, whatever you want to talk about. Just download my app. So go to the Apple App Store or Google Play for Androids and download the Energetic Alchemist app. And you will see that you have access to the Reiki Radio Roundtables. Again, that happens on Tuesdays. They are not recorded. So if you want to have the discussion, you have to come live. All right. So that is all for now, beautiful alchemist. I hope you enjoy this episode with the amazing Danielle Dulski. Again, her website is danielledulski.com. Be sure to go down in the show description to register for her free discussion about her book. And I will see you on the other side. Hey everyone, welcome to Reiki Radio. Today we are here with the beautiful Danielle Dulski, founder of the Hag School. I am so excited to talk to you again. I'm just right now trying to take a breath, breathe it in. Thank you for making time to come back today.
Yeah, thank you so much for having me, Yolanda. Absolutely.
Yeah, so I just want to tell everyone as a reminder, we had the pleasure of speaking with you 2 years ago, I think it was. And it was when Seasons of the Moon and Flame had come out. And that's where I really fell in love with your work because you're such a poet. And so, for people who don't know, you are a writer, a poet, a witch, and a heathen. And we'll talk about that too. But you also have the Sacred Hag's Oracle, which we spoke about at that time. So, today is a whole new conversation. So, I wanted to ask you, first of all, about that. Just want to have a little bit of discussion with you about these titles because I'm sure people have so many ideas of what it all means, and you're so bold in your descriptions. I love it. Could you talk a little bit about what it means, first of all, for you to even have the identification and the experience expression of witch, and then also heathen?
Good questions. So, witch to me, the etymology of witch is wise one. So I think that I claimed the name witch for myself long before I understood that it meant wise one, because I was 24 years old when I decided I was a witch. So I know that I wasn't that wise. I have a lot of evidence for why I was not particularly wise at that time, but it felt really right. And the claiming of that name for me was really about, I had just given birth to my first son. I was looking at him, and I had been practicing witchcraft for a long time and hiding it, mostly because of the way I was raised as a born again Christian. And I hadn't been part of that for a long time, but I still had all of that trepidation around, they're going to burn me. I mean, I think it comes down to that, right? And so I was looking at him when I was nursing him in the middle of the night, which is just like the loneliest time, at 2 o'clock in the morning, or just dark night of the soul. And I was thinking that I never really want him to have to hide a huge part of who he is. And so why was I doing that? And so that claiming of the name witch, and I wasn't screaming it from the rooftops or anything, but it was a decision that I was no longer going to strategically hide it. And then heathen, I think that came along much later. So heathen was something that my mother used to call me when I was young, when I was like being bad, and supposed to mean that I was ungodly or being sinful or something. But the word story that's tucked inside the word heathen is dweller on the heath. So the people that were primarily in the northern European lands that were the last to be Christianized or colonized, they were like the holdouts. Those were the heathens. They lived on the in the rural areas on the heath. So thinking about always, what does it mean for me to be a dweller on the heath, even though I don't live on a heath? What does it mean to tend to my inner uncivilized self? And I think that I can ask myself that question every day and come up with a different answer. And it doesn't necessarily mean that I'm off the grid, because obviously I'm not, since we're zooming. Or that I've shed all of these, responsibilities or duties or, things that would have me belong to a city, which is what civilized means, because I do live in a very civilized place. And so for me, like the union of the two, witch and heathen. So what does it mean to be a kind of dweller on the fringes, on the borderlands, figuring out how much I can get away with and yet still very much belonging to life and my people? And what wisdom is there within that? So, in fairy tales, the witch is the one who kind of lives on the borderlands. She's not totally removed from the world, but she's not really a part of it wholly either. And I like that, being just on the edges. So, yeah.
Being just on the fringe. It's interesting hearing you speak, and you just reminded me in the book there was a part where you do talk about the etymology of very particular of specific words, and it made me even more curious about the way in which you write. And so I wanted to ask you about that too, because it's interesting. I was trying to wrap my brain around like really the way I was ingesting the way that you write. And I'm like, it's so poetic, but it's also gritty. I think when we hear the word poetic, you just think, I don't know, love and softness. And no, there's something about the way that you write that's very gritty is the only word I can think of, but it is also beautiful at the same time. It's like this, and there's something about it that is, even in a beautiful way, there's something that you can say that will make us like uncomfortable inside and intrigued at the same time. Like it's very interesting. So I was curious about that. Have you always been this type of writer? Is this the way your soul always spoke, or was there some experience in life that really brought you to this?
I think I was just talking about my experience in my high school creative writing class. So it's really fresh in my mind how, I was maybe acknowledged as being a relatively good, solid writer at the time, but it was always that my writing was too drippy and there was so many adjectives in it and my sentences were too long and all of that. And I think that that is still true. I mean, for the most part, that's the criticism I still get from the people that maybe don't love my writing, is that it's just kind of, it's got a lot in there. And I think that I was not aware of this until I started really weaving witchcraft with writing. But in a spell container, writing aside, I'm always trying to put some paradox in there. So I'm trying to have what I call the light, the dark, and the holy. So you have this click of opposites that would be light and shadow. And then there is this air of the sacred or the hallowed within it. And I think that when I would be writing a charm, so something that would be spoken in a spell container, even if it's just one sentence, I would try to have the light, the dark, and the holy within that one sentence. So, like I'm often saying, incantations that begin with, by the power, pain, and prayers of my foremothers. So, power, pain, and prayer is very like the light, the dark, and the holy. So, what you're saying about like the parts that kind of bite you or whatever that might be. I also really like the word rot and words that make you kind of think about death in a way that is cosmic and cyclical and not necessarily something to be feared. So yeah, I'm sorry. I know that I do try to get that in my writing consciously now as much as possible. It wasn't always that way, but the sogginess of my writing was probably always there.
It's so funny because you described it as like some people said your sentences were too drippy. And I was like, I actually like that. That sounds like, ooh, drippy. But it's interesting that you describe it this way because that was one of the words that I wrote down was duality. there's this way where you really do marry and harmonize. I mean, it's very clear, like different sections, and we're going to talk about the makeup of your new book, but how you clearly pair, you know, what would seemingly be opposites, but what binds them is very interesting. It's almost like you allow the opposites to be in the glory of their opposition, but then there's something binding there that it's almost like a unification, but still they can have their freedom at the same time. You bring out the beauty in what we may deem ugly, but then also show us the darker side of what we may assume as beautiful. I hope that makes sense. You guys have to read her work. It's beautiful. No, I absolutely love it. And I remember even after meeting you a couple of years ago, that's all I could say about you. I was like, she's so poetic. I couldn't articulate what I thought of your work in your words, but it's incredible. So now you have written this book, Bones and Honey, a Heathen Prayer Book. And even the title alone just made me smile. It's like a heathen prayer book, again, just because of the assumption that we have with these different titles, you know? And so one of the things that came to mind was you speak about kind of peppered through just the calling of us at a soul level being here at this time. And we look out in the world and there's so much going on, so much chaos, so much disruption. And yet we chose to be here at this time. And so I wanted to hear from your point of view, what it is you think that soul's call is that we can recognize to have more acceptance about being here, and then how these words can kind of help us navigate.
Yeah, I really believe that. And I'm aware that not everybody believes that we chose to be here. And I respect that. But for me, it really does feel like, why else would I be here?
Right.
I must have chosen to be here. I don't believe that it was an accident. And I know, like, especially through 2020 and since, it hasn't gone away yet, but this awareness of moving through this kind of global underworld myth, and as an Aquarian, like being just aware of the grief and the death and all of the things that we might say are negative about it, and yet just being so like stunned almost to a point of joy that I get to be here and see it. You know, I think that there are other chapters in the world story that maybe would have felt a bit more stable. And yeah, and maybe not, I don't know. But just in reflection, maybe would have been more stable. And yet I chose to be here for like this one, and that this is probably just the beginning of some great thing, and I get to be here for it. So, so for everyone else, I feel like, I don't know at what point the acceptance enters in, but I think that it is helpful to kind of take an inventory pretty regularly about the chapters of your life that you have lived and what are the big themes that are apparent within those chapters, because it can help you see maybe what you're being oriented toward now. You know, what have you always loved doing since you were a child? Like, what's your primary art? What are the moments in life where you really felt like you were the most you could possibly be? If you kind of track those, and it takes some time to do it, but if you can track those moments where you really felt so much in the flow, you can see like what is obviously part of your soul's calling. Mm-hmm. And you can also see how it evolves over time. And as you do live through these personal once upon a times and ever afters, and be able to see what story might be happening next. So again, I don't know if that's a tool for acceptance, but it does really support this holding of the tension. And I think, you know, being able to name your gifts that you're holding in one hand and like these deep bleeding wounds that you're holding in the other hand, and then sensing this great power that comes from holding the tension between both. So in my book, you know, Bones and Honey, that is what I'm trying to name, is like the bones are what remain after we die. So, I mean, that is the gnarliness, that is the rot. And then the honey is the sweetness and the joy in life. So, you know, we can't let the bones block the honey, or the fact that we will be bones someday, sooner or later, keep us from enjoying the sweetness of life. So, yeah.
It's funny you say that was something I was going to ask you about. There's two things. One, I want to say first with the bones. I remember just recently I saw a skull. I mean, we're close to Halloween, so there's skulls everywhere. And I was looking at some skull and just having the thought of like how they are usually evoking us some kind of fear or remind us of immortality or something. I don't know. We automatically assume that, I don't know, a skull just seems like something horrific associated with death in a lot of ways, but it is evidence of life, you know? And so I remember having this moment of, oh, I spoke to someone and they had a skull with butterflies all around it. So kind of that pairing that you do, you know? And I thought, like, that's really interesting if we just how we perceive things and then what that gives us in the lens of understanding of our life. And death, for that matter, and how those lenses can change the overall experience. And I think that's what your work does. It's so beautiful in that way. So I wanted to ask you about this too. I mentioned before the way that you say things, and even that you bring up the etymology of different words. But how important do you think language is? And is that part of why you seem to have such a reverence for it, but just the importance of our words and not, I guess, what we speak, but also the type of speaking that we're doing, the type of creation we're doing.
Yeah, I think language is incredibly important. I think that for me, something that's readily apparent, weirdly, is the similarity between writing and painting. Like, I went to school for painting, and painting was kind of my thing, and I do still paint, but it was my primary art for a long time. And just being able to really clearly see how certain words are very like colors on a paint palette, and they make you feel a certain way, just like a certain, you know, shade of red or blue might make you feel. And so if I'm trying to paint a certain picture with my words, then I am kind of strategically doing that. So in that way, they are incredibly important. I also think that I'm very into, as you can tell probably from my book, like mining the meaning out of different words, and where did they come from, and just being able to see how like a single word is really a whole story. Like, you can see where it came from, and you know, sometimes it's really surprising and sometimes it isn't, but when it's surprising, it's just so good. Like, the word writer, for instance, means the painter of signs.
Wow.
That's really cool, right? So, you know, the words that just have become, you know, have been evolved to mean a certain thing. Sorry, my dog's trying to come out of the shadows here.
Oh.
Words that have evolved to mean a certain thing that didn't start out that way at all. And then why was that? Like, what was going on in the world when they were born, and then how they evolved over time. So I love that idea. So, you know, in that way, language is incredibly important. And then there's this other side of things where, and yet it isn't that important, because obviously it keeps changing.
Yeah.
So it's not so much important as a static entity. It's important in its evolution,
Yes.
and how, like, you know, we're in conversations with these words as we're speaking. And that's cool.
Yeah, no, it really is. And that's what I love about reading your work too. There are certain writers and just the way that certain people may arrange words that give the words themselves a different texture, and it causes you then to recognize and notice language in a different way. And that's what I really appreciate about it. So I wanted to know, do you have a copy of the book there with
I
you?
do, actually. I just
If you could just show.
got it.
Yeah, I have my pre-orders on the way. I can't wait to get it actually. But I just wanted everyone to be able to see a
Oh, yeah.
copy of the book. Yeah, this is a beautiful cover.
You. I mean, I didn't draw it, but yes,
Yeah,
I do
yeah,
love
yeah.
it.
It's absolutely beautiful. So you did explain to us about The Bones and Honey, the title of the book, which is gorgeous and striking. Could you talk a bit about how it's laid out? Because I noticed right away, I'm like, okay, wait, there's 13 books within this book. And then under each of the 13 books, there are 13 verses or sections. Yeah. So could you talk, what was the inspiration about that? Or did it just kind of
Yeah. So it was always going to be 13 books. So I do love, I think that this is maybe true for all of my books, where it's the book of this and the book of this. And so there's books within the one book.
Right.
So it was always going to be 13 books, and each book was named for a particular archetype that I was feeling was important medicine right now. So
Yes.
kind of, you know, post. Well, not post anything, but maybe, well, yeah, but I'll say post 2020. And what are the more medicinal archetypes? If an archetype is an energetic container of meaning, and we can look at those as being power sources that can amplify certain aspects of our psyche right now and kind of orient us toward where we're meant to be going right now. What would those archetypes be? So the wounded healer, for instance, is
Yeah.
I feel a really important archetype right now. So it was always going to be these 13 books, but originally, when I was coming up with the plan and kind of pitching it, it was going to be 20, I think it was going to be 29 or maybe even more different prayers that were within a single book. And then it
Oh.
became clear that then the book, The Bones and Honey, would have been like a 500,000 word nobody will read. So yes, now it is 13 books, and each book then has 13 prayers within it. And some of those prayers are fairy tales.
Yes.
So there's, I think, six different fairy tales sort of revisioned to amplify that archetype in the book. But yeah, that's how it's organized. So these medicinal archetypes, and those are very contradictory. So thinking about how we house all of these different energies inside of us all the time, and it can feel really defeating when we are told, or when we bring ourselves maybe to believe that we're only meant to be one of them
Right.
at once, and that we can't, that, but when we're just full of all of these contradictions. So we are, you know, the wild child, we are the seductive lover and the wounded healer and the bone witch. So we're all of these things at once, and naming that as being a really potent source of power and purpose, instead of it being like, oh, why can't I just be one thing?
That's interesting because this is something I was thinking reading it is that it is so mirroring. Like I imagined, well, one, myself, I could see and feel myself all throughout the book in the different archetypes and the way that you describe things. It was a way of feeling seen, but also again, like through the audacity of your words. But I could see other people I know in there as well and knew, like, wow, if they read these words, they would feel so seen and okay with, again, like the parts of us that maybe we judge or there have been projections thrown on us. It feels like it's a beautiful way to re-understand some things. And I don't know. It's absolutely beautifully written again, because I said this about the first book. But this is what I loved. So, just for everyone to know, you did mention they have these prayers, and some are shorter, and some, like the stories, are longer. I want to talk to you about one of them in particular. But I loved about it too is I allowed myself to just grab the book and open it and see what it fell on. So I just had the intention of whatever I'm meant to read right now or what will resonate with me now, because there's a lot of prayers. I mean, you know, so it's like I want to see which ones really speak to me on this day. And it was incredible what my eyes would land on and it would speak to me so fully. So I wanted to ask you about that too. Did you have any intention of how the book would be used? And how did you even imagine the different archetypes? Like, was it based on what you were seeing people go through? Was it based on your own eruptions?
Yeah, both. I think I started with, I've been very into archetype for, I don't know, 5 years. So thinking about archetypes as being very like small gods, which a lot of witches would fight me on. But like for me, in a spell container, I might work with an archetype as a power source, in the very similar way that I might work with a deity. And so thinking about which archetypes have resourced me in my moments of maybe being in a dark night of the soul, or maybe not, maybe being in a place of standing in my power or whatever it might be. And then how have I seen those archetypes also re not maybe not resource other people, but maybe or just be relevant to other people, and how certain stories, which of course are houses for archetypes, are medicinal for people in different ways, as in like the same story can just meet, 20 different people each in a completely different way. They'll hear, certain words that other people might not hear, or they'll see a certain image in the story that the other person might not hear. And it almost always just gives you exactly the medicine that the deep soul needs at the time. So there was, I guess, in the writing, at least maybe not for every single prayer, but a lot of them, there was kind of a blind kind of trust that, like, I'm going to write this thing and it's going to serve some people in some way, and then other people just totally it won't be for them, and that's okay. So, yeah, kind of like allowing the wild intelligence that I can't see be at work sometimes. But yeah.
Yeah, there were two that I wanted to share with you very specifically because I mean, I know I don't want to give all the book away. I'm not going to read them, but the one of the times I opened it up, I landed on coins in the couch, and it literally made me laugh and smile at the same time because again, it did that thing of this is really how I feel. Like I really there's a part of me that, has to fully accept like the way that wealth is seen and understood in this realm and what it provides. But at the same time, I don't give a fuck. Like, I don't care. Do you know? And it's like, I just want to feel, safe and secure and that, like, these types of things. But ultimately, yeah. So that one really made my heart smile because it was, again, like this looking into a mirror of there it is, Danielle. Like, yes, that's exactly how I feel, And let me claim this and be okay with it, but be okay with my matter of importance, not necessarily the worldview. And then the witch's antidote. This is so funny because this one I actually opened up on this morning. And I did this energy thing yesterday. I was just a participant just laying there. And someone was doing energy work. And I literally, it felt like just things coming out of every orifice of my body. I was like, what is happening? And then I read that this morning. And again, it made me smile and it made me laugh. And it made me think of just anyway, just what this life is. And I just was so curious about like literally, like, does she just is she walking through the grocery store and these words just hit her? Like, does she like sit down and meditate and say, "Speak to me"? Like, what happens? Is it like a combination of everything?
Yeah, well, so this book was like a little bit different to write because, it could be written in these smaller bursts because I'm just writing a paragraph at a time for most of the prayers. But so, yeah, sometimes I would be just walking through the grocery store. No, probably not writing in the grocery store, but getting back in my car and writing it really quickly. A lot of them were on my phone, or I wrote them on my phone when I would be, doing things. So it wasn't a necess and then I would translate them to the, to word later, but it wasn't written in exactly the same way as I would write my other, longer, more prescriptive type books. So, Yeah, but it does usually feel like, I'll have an idea, and it does usually surround either a single word or a really short phrase, and then the rest of it kind of blooms around it. And I'm a really like visual and clairvoyant person, so I tend to see the thing
Yeah.
and then I write to describe it. Yeah, that's what it feels like, is like, being met with a vision and then just trying to pull the right words out of whatever it is that I might see. That's true most of the time.
Yeah. Well, I was curious about that too, because I literally did wonder if she's like walking through the grocery store, these inspirations just hit her out of nowhere. I mean, one, because there are a lot of prayers in here. There are a lot of, prayer songs, incantations, as you call it, all the variations of it. And it also made me curious too, like, what do is this something you just do for yourself? Like, when you are in your practice and whatever it is that you do for yourself, does it come out in this way? Like, do you create these very personalized prayers? And what is the importance of that? The reason I'm asking is because I also came across, when I was wondering, there was somewhere in the book that you said it was like the similarity of like a prayer also being like a spell, and really no difference between the two. So could you talk a little bit about that?
Yeah. Well, so I do believe that as it's important for writers to write every day. And a lot of times for me, that looks like just writing one of these short prayers in 15 or 20 minutes, because that's how long I've got. So in terms of like being part of my personal practice, it does feel like a kind of tending to my art. And if I'm, if I'm just like in this place where it's like I have to write something, these are the sorts of things that I would write. It wouldn't necessarily be, a longer story or anything else. It would be this kind of brief petition to the other world to, do something or participate in my experience or give me a sign or something like that. So yeah, on that level, yes. And then to me personally, witchcraft is very much an art. I do love, the beauty that goes into the symbolic action of a spell. And to me, that's not very different from the beauty that I would want to and try to infuse into my writing. So it does feel very similar. And yeah, a spell is a prayer. Prayer means the earnest request. And I think that what some witches would fight me on would be the word request. Like in a spell, you're kind of claiming it like it's already happened, and there's this sense of fierceness and ferocity, but you can have that in a prayer too. It doesn't necessarily mean you're lying prostrate on the ground and humbling yourself before something. It is a request. It's, a prayer and a spell. It's a conversation. You want an answer to it. You want you want it to work, right? So, yeah.
Oh, that makes me think too. It seems like, and this is just, of course, my interpretation, listening to everything you're saying now, it feels like this book, in a way, like if you were some kind of, well, you just being you is fine enough. But like, I just seeing this vision of you, like just coming and like handing the book down to us, like, come on, here, this is going to help you move ahead and move forward. Because to your point, I mean, there was obviously, like, in the last few years, like this condensed eruption and disturbance, not just externally, but it brought up a lot for all of us internally. And on the other side, a lot of people feel very free in some ways. A lot of people feel confused about who they are and what they want now in some ways. Like, there's just this, a lot was stirred. And so it feels like, as if you this book is like, okay, it's okay. Just wherever you are right now, just here, grab this, and there's something in here for you that's going to help you reflect and will help you recover and will help you request and will help you just keep doing the dance. And so that was also, I was wondering, like, what the inspiration was for this book, especially in these times that this came through you now. Like, did it start coming through during 2020 around that, or was it like after the dust.
I think it was after the dust. I think it, I am very into this. I don't know if it's its own archetype, but the three stages of initiation and thinking about everything that you just named about 2020 and 2021, and it really being this first stage of initiation, like this severance. And so people feeling lost, it's because we crossed the threshold and we can't go back. And all of society is telling us we have to go back, or the overculture is telling
Right.
us we have to go back and return to the way it was. And we just know that we can't deep down. And so what follows that severance or the death is the liminality and the void. And the renewal doesn't happen until the third stage. And I don't think the renewal has happened for most people yet. And so we're in that underworld, like Inanna hanging on the meat hook. And, that's the least comfortable of the three stages of initiation. It's like, what do we do here? Time doesn't move the same way.
No.
You sort of don't know what's coming next. The uncertainty's so thick. And so, thinking about all of these contradictions and naming these archetypal medicines that are in the book, it's not really offering a solution because or a way out, I don't think, of the underworld. It's just like help, I hope, resourcing the reader and holding all of these tensions that they're already holding, but
Yeah.
giving them maybe some labels and names and prayers for
Yeah.
being on the meat hook.
Yes. Yes. It's I wrote down a small piece, just a sentence that you wrote in the book, and it goes so perfectly with what you said right now. I don't remember where it fell in the book, but you said to be alive today is to be an apprentice midwife in the birthing room for a wilder world. I was like, wow, that really struck me. Yeah. I mean, because really, again, I feel like there's something soul settling about just the acceptance of hey, man, no, but hey, like we came here and we're here. And clearly, something has, there's been an interrupter. And now, what do we hold in vision? And now, what do we want? Right. And to your point, while it can be very uncomfortable, even starting to be curious enough to examine these deeper parts of ourselves, what if, And it's funny you mentioned earlier the Aquarian part. I literally just told someone this morning, it often comes up, like why I even am so dedicated to my practice and why I care. And I'm like, well, it's a really odd thing being Aquarius, I'm like, because I genuinely care about humanity. Like, I genuinely want like all of us to have, like our freedom and, and be like reasonable humans, right? But just to be out of our upset, to be out of our whatever it may be. However, I'm also constantly horrified by humanity at the same time, And so like I have this weird like, I don't really want to be in it, but to what you said, I'm so excited to be here and to witness this and be a part of it and be part of the crazy parts too, right? However, I'm also what keeps me connected is the thought that if we all just do what we're doing now, as ugly as it may feel and seem, there's the possibility that next time when I come back, I don't even have a hope of like this like bright shiny day this lifetime. No, I don't even care. I'm just like, whatever this is, okay, let's see what we do with this. And then maybe a couple of lifetimes down, it'll look better.
I think that Aquarians are so good at having that really long vision, and because me too. I don't think I get to see the end of it, and I'm fine with it. I'm fine with it. Because I do trust that I do trust that this is going somewhere pretty epic. I have that hope, but in this lifetime, no. And my kids too. I don't even think that they really get to see it. So, and I'm fine with it. Like, let's be part of the long ancestral story and trust that it has a really good ever after. and we'll see it when we see it.
Yeah. And there's something too that I think that just lets me even like, it's more accepting of like now. Like, I'm not trying to make right now change overnight.
Right.
It just makes me more curious about, ooh, we get to have a hand in the process of what
Right.
is happening right now. Yeah. But
Yeah.
anyway, ever after, as you say, there
Right.
are some, and I'm glad you said like they were, a retelling of fairy tales. 'Cause when I read some of them, I was like, wait a minute, this reminds me of, but
Yeah.
one that really, I think I'm going to read it a few more times, was the Silver Tree and the Gold Tree.
Yeah, that was
That was so good. It was one of those ones where I started to speed read because I just wanted to see what was going to happen, you know?
a
And there was
good
something about it that just felt so true to
one.
like different relationships that we may encounter in life. And it stirred up things. Yeah. And I was like, oh my gosh, I got to read this one again and again. And I'm really going to. But even that, now that you mentioned that they kind of are like a retelling of the fairy tales, would the fairy tale come to mind and you just saw it a different way? Or like, were these in some way a reflection of what you've either noticed or encountered yourself?
So all of them in there, I'm just making sure I remember them. I'm pretty sure this is true. All of the fairy tales that are in there, I didn't change them very much from their original collected version. So Gold Tree and Silver Tree, that was collected from the Scottish Highlands in like the late 1800s. And it's supposed to be like the older, gnarlier version of Snow White. And so instead of the mirror, mirror on the wall, it's the little trout
The
in the
well,
well. And instead of stepmother, it's the actual mother, which I think makes it a little bit sharper. But for all of them, it's a revisioning in that they're my words, but I had a fidelity to the story, and I didn't try to change the story too much because I really didn't need to in order for whatever that medicinal archetype was to be amplified. So, I'm trying to kind of amplify whatever that archetype is for the book that the story might be housed in Bones and Honey. But yeah, Gold Tree, Silver Tree, that was one that I found really by accident. I do this weird thing in my practice where if I have a dream that feels like somewhat mythic, I'll Google the images with the word fairy tale or story and see, is there a story that I just don't know? And almost always there is. And Gold Tree, Silver Tree came from that. I was having all these dreams of silver trees, and then I started having like the same dream, but my mother would be in the dream. So it started to have this really profound effect on me. But yeah, like finding stories that feel like medicine and then being able to see how your whole life in some ways has mirrored that story. It's really cool and also sometimes shocking. But yeah, I think fairy tales are everything. Really, they have this deep medicine in it. They were kept primarily by women, so they were taken less seriously. And it was like, well, nobody's going to take a children's story seriously, so let's tuck the old magic inside this story. So it's almost like every fairy tale is its own kind of box of shadows. So we didn't have to hide the spell under the floorboards because a story wouldn't be hunted. It was just this, really benign thing, right? To the hunters anyway. So, yeah.
And that one, I mean, it was such an interesting contrast to say how I said the others that I read, they would make me like laugh and smile at the same time. And I thought, like, wow. And there are a few, like, really, they do poke at you, but in a very beautiful way, because I think your words really do cause some kind of reflection. And so with Silver Tree and Gold Tree, it felt like that. And even hearing you describe right now, it's hitting me this idea of like just letting whatever is the rot, like let it rot. You know what I mean? Like don't try to make it pretty. You know what I mean? Like just because it did something about that. It really struck something. That's why I have to go back and read it again. But whatever it was, it felt more like something that I'm holding that doesn't feel good, but maybe I have tried to make it pretty, right? And instead, no, it's like if it's rotting, let it effing rot. And then, so you know what I'm saying? Listen, I'm telling you guys, it's a book of magic, is what it is. Yeah, Bones and Honey is a book of magic. That's what I'm calling it. And I know we're going to run out of time soon. I really do. I mean it with all sincerity. And everyone knows who listens. Like, I only say these things when I really genuinely mean it. Like, you are a gorgeous writer. And if you go back to the interview 2 years ago, you'll hear me say the same. But this is just so interesting. I think I love too because it is one of those books you will go back to again and again. It's not something you're going to just read and then it's on the bookshelf. Like, you could literally work with this book every day and just see. I also like the idea of it of like, if I know I'm having a day where I need something, I need some kind of medicine. Yeah. And I know like something's stirring or stuck or whatever, just by the way you've titled the books, I know that a particular book will call to me. And then within that, there will be another calling to whichever prayer.
Thank you. That was what I was hoping for.
No, I mean, it's really beautifully done. And I just love the whole 13 thing. Not to mention, this will air on the 13th, right? But I wanted to ask you, because we speak a lot about you writing and being such a beautiful writer, you have a program called the Night Book. And it's a 13-week writing intensive that will start in February. Could you talk a little bit about what the night book is and who it's for? Like, do you have to be a writer already?
You don't. It is a program for scripting, mapping, and then actually writing a book. So I've led these writing intensives, all of them different, but pretty regularly since early 2020, maybe even the end of 2019. And it's a small group container, so it's just 9 people in the night book. And it's what's beautiful about them is that sometimes there's people in there that have published books, traditionally, and then there's people that have like really never written anything aside from what's in their journal. And everybody comes together and everybody's just on the same level. Like, it doesn't matter. There's no hierarchy. And it's all about everybody writing their own individual book of wisdoms. So it might be part memoir or part Book of Shadows or grimoire or part legacy book. There's often people that are saying, I don't really want anybody to see this except my family. I want this to be the thing that I leave behind, so that this is what they remember about me, or this is what I want them to know about my story. Because if you tell them what you want them to know, then they don't figure out all of the other things. At least I hope that's true. So yeah, it is a program that's for people that, I mean, you do need to write, so you have to like writing, but there's no required level of proficiency or experience. And mapping the book that you're feeling called to write. So with these programs, my whole thing is like, if you've already thought of the book, it already exists on some plane. If you've imagined it, then the spirit of the word that wants to be written already exists, and you just have to be in communion with it. And sometimes you can do that in 13 weeks, and sometimes it ends up taking years. And that's kind of a surprise and up to the spirit of the word and not necessarily you all the time. But yeah.
Oh, that's really exciting. The reason when I saw it on your site and I thought, like, wow, that would be really cool to be in that kind of space. One, because I think it gives us the structure and the discipline. If it is something that we have been saying for years, like, oh, I want to work on a book, or oh, I just want to see what the experience would be to sit down and write. That usually when we have these kind of spaces, we actually make the room for it. And yeah, and then also knowing there's community, but honestly, on my side, like, knowing there's someone who writes so beautifully like you that's holding the space, that's attractive to me, because then I already feel inspired, you know?
Thank you.
Yeah, so I just want to let everyone know about that. The Night Book, it starts in February, but you can go to her website and learn more about it. Danielle, you've done it again. No. Really, truly. I mean, honestly, this is such an incredible book. And I haven't even gotten through all of the prayers yet, but it honestly, there was part of me I didn't want to, because I was like, there, I want to be surprised on some days of where I just feel call and land on certain things or be able to go to it and still not have revealed
Yeah.
all of it yet. Yeah. And so I really am looking forward to it. And this, by the time we air, it will be released fully, right? I believe November 7th.
I think it's November 14th now,
14th.
but
Okay.
yeah,
So
that's
tomorrow.
so tomorrow.
Yeah. So everyone, really, I would say look at all of her work, because the other book I read as well was so beautiful. But if you go to danieldelsky.com, you can read about all of Danielle's work there. But also, you post beautiful posts and like so poetic. So if you just want some inspiration, some words to be like sugar and chaos to your ears, visit her on Instagram at Wolf Woman Witch. Beautiful, beautiful content that you share there as well.
you.
Yeah, no, thank you. And thank you again for coming to share with all of us today. And I look forward to chatting with you again in the next couple of years, next book, next go round.
Yes, we'll see where we are there then.
Yeah. Yeah. Thank you so much, my love. And for everyone else, we will see you very soon. Bye for now. Okay, beautiful alchemist. Thank you so much for joining me and Danielle for this conversation today. Again, you can go to her website, danieldelsky.com. Don't forget that she is going to have a live session to explore the book Bones and Honey. So if you order the book, be sure to join her November 15th, 16th, and 17th for the live sessions. And if you register, you will have access to the recordings. You can go down into the show description. You will see the link to register for the live sessions and have that discussion with Danielle. Also, do not forget to go to my website, theenergeticalchemist.com, and you can sign up for the Reiki Raise Global Healing Summit, which is going on right now. We are on day three. Again, you have the option to register for free, or you can do the all access. Both options are available on the homepage of my website. And while you are there, sign up for the newsletter so that you get free access to Creating with the Moon and Stars, as well as 22 days of transformation, and you will get the energy of the month. Okay. So have a beautiful new moon, my loves. I thank you all for being here. I'll see you next time. And remember to always journey in love.